voice. In fact, why was it speaking at all? He looked down, found himself staring directly into those two tiny eyes hidden behind two gigantic goggles. Of course. It was speaking with Maz's voice, because it was Maz. Finally, something made sense. "You're not a barstool at all," Hans said, as if he'd just solved one of the great mysteries of life. Then he frowned. "Wait, who are you calling little?" Maz climbed up the actual barstool and plopped down beside Han. She nodded at Bragthap, the bartender, and then lifted the bubbly concoction he put in front of her. Han watched her every move with mild, bristling awe that he couldn't even begin to explain. "Normally," Maz said, "I would have you out the door and on your ass for even looking sideways at Frapsen here." She nodded at the still noodling Fromprath. "Not to even mention that you were staring at me again. He's very shy, you know, Frapsen. Took me ages just to convince the poor fellow to get on the stage. But there he is." She paused, taking in the lovely toppling and tumbling harmonic cascade that seemed to fill the air around them like delicious smoke. "But anyway," Maz continued, her expression sharpening on Han, "I'm not going to put you out." "Because you like me," Han said. "No," Maz snapped. "Because I'm in a good mood, Han. That's it." "Oh, don't push your luck, smuggler." Han acknowledged the wisdom with a nod and sipped some more blue milk as the Fromprath song worked its way deeper into his own sense of loss, the feelings of emptiness he would never dare say out loud, his... "What's her name?" Maz asked. "Why does everyone..." "Ugh!" He cut himself off and swatted the whole conversation away. "Doesn't matter." "Names always matter," Maz said. "Mine, for instance, means... owner of the warrior's crown," she chuckled. "One interpretation of it, anyway. Depends who you ask."
"Well, that is pretty," Han acknowledged.
"And yours is such a lonely one, when you think about it."
Han had plenty, and now that familiar sorrow crept back over his heart in eclipse a never-ending repeat.
"This has really been a fun conversation. Thanks, Maz." Maz shrugged.
"I do what I can." "But you'll be all right. You're still just a kid, really. What are you, 18, 19?
"I will have you know that I'm well into my early 20s.
"Imagine that. And still, so much to learn.
"About women?"
She got up in his face, her breath heavy with something flowery and sharp.
"About yourself, smuggler."
Han managed to smile. "Right. I knew that."
"Then,"
Maz declared, settling back down,
"then, yes, lots to learn about us women, too."
A low murmur slipped through the air, winding around the Batanga notes like a lonely stream. Han shook his head.
"There your boy goes again, playing songs that are about exactly what I'm feeling."
"The song is about missing Dathomir,"
Maz said quietly.
"Ugh, I take it back. What kind of maniac misses Dathomir?"
"Someone whose people have had to live in exile from there for hundreds of years because the Dathomirians forced them out."
"Oh."
"First lesson in learning about yourself," Maz said, "is not everything is about you."
"Han!"
It was Sana's voice, and there was Sana, barreling into the bar with her blaster out and a package of some kind tucked into her armpit. Han frowned at her.
"Seems you might be needed," Maz advised.
Sana knocked over a chair and brushed past Frapsen.
"Han, snap out of it, damn it! We gotta move!"
"Young lady," Maz said testily.
Then a roar erupted from the doorway. Something tall and hairy stood there, looking like a supersized husk on spice. Han didn't have time to figure out what it was, because it lurched across the bar toward Sana.
"There is no fighting permitted in this establishment," Maz yelled as Sana dashed past.
"Oh boy," Han said.
"One good thing about having a Fromprath for entertainment,"
Maz said, shaking her head, as Fropson lifted his batanga over one shoulder. They double as security. The Frompress swung just in time to catch the charging beast directly in the face with a mushy crack. That sound wasn't the batanga shattering like Han thought it would. The hairy thing flew backward, face shattered, and lay still. "What was that?" Han yelled, and then a blaster shot shrieked through the air from the doorway. Han was on the floor before he'd realized he jumped for cover. Above him, Maz dished out rushed commands as the few patrons left screamed and ducked under tables. Sana flew past, let off two shots toward the door, and glared at Han. "You coming?" Another shot fizzed and then thunked against the bar right by Han's head. "Coming," he yelled, hopping up and dashing for the back exit behind Sana. "Who'd you piss off now?" he demanded as they broke out into the thick Takodana night. "Bounty hunters," Sana said. "Mean ones." "Is there a nice kind?" The wall beside Han exploded, showering them both with debris as they hurtled out of the way. "That wasn't a regular blaster," Han said, glancing up. A cruel reptilian face glared out from the lit doorway. "You got us tangled up with a Trandoshan?" "I told you it was mean bounty hunters," Sana said. The creature raised his mortar launcher, and then something huge clobbered him from behind. Frapson. All six of the Frompras arms ensnarled the bounty hunter as the two tumbled forward in a clutter of curses and howls. Three more figures tumbled out of Maz's place, blasters blazing. "Go!" Sana yelled. "Now!" They bolted down a quiet side street, cut a hard left, and crossed the main square toward the starship bay. The whole world had snapped perfectly into focus as soon as those blaster shots rang out, and now the hours leading up to it just seemed like a painful haze. "The Falcon ready?" Sana asked.
"Always, sister, always."
"Are you, though?"
"Usually, sister, usually."
They made their way between a Gungan freighter and two corvettes, ducked around the landing gear of someone's poorly parked shuttle, and then dashed up the gangplank of the Falcon.
"Chewie!" Han yelled, stepping over some old clothes and a small pile of... bottles or something, and barreling toward the cockpit.
"Chewie, where are you? We gotta..."
The engines rumbled to life as Han slid into the seat beside his furry co-pilot.
"Well, there you are," he muttered, clicking on the Navi computer and prepping the hyperdrive. "What took you so long?"
Chewie barked with annoyance and then yelped, pointing. The bounty hunters had stormed into the bay, and a slew of shots peppered the Falcon along with the ships around it.
"Sana!" Han yelled over his shoulder. "We're gonna need you on..."
Glass splattered out from the Falcon, scattering the bounty hunters.
"Cannon," Han finished. "Well, all right then. Glad to see everyone's making themselves at home."
He pulled the accelerator and let the roaring engines fill him. Space awaited, that impossible vastness, as empty as his heart, where he could be perfectly free. As long as they didn't get blown up on the way out. More blasts rocked the Falcon as they circled into the sky and then shot over the ancient spirals of Maz's castle and dancing lights in Nymeb Lake.
"What in the stars did you steal, Sana?"
Han demanded as they zoomed out of Takodana's gravity pool and out into space. A chuckle crackled over the comm.
About that.
Chewie let out another growl of warning as three dots appeared on the radar screen.
"Yeah, one of them's Trandoshan," Han said. "Why?"
Chewie snarled and pushed a button.
"Why are we slowing down?" Sana yelled over the comm.
"Good question, Chewie," Han snapped. "Why are we slowing down?"
The Falcon rocked as the approaching ships released a barrage of laser fire.
"Chewie!" Han yelled.
The Wookiee slammed both fists on the control panel and roared.
"No, we can't turn around," Han said. "I don't care what the Trandoshans did to the Wookiees."
Okay, easy, easy. Of course I care what they did. But we can't deal with that right now, Chewie. We've got cargo to deliver and payment to collect, and we also don't have the firepower it would take to go head-to-head with these guys. Okay?
Chewie grumbled, and the Falcon blasted forward. "I promise we can go after those reptilian freaks some other time, all right?" Chewie yelped.
And anyway, Sana said over the comm, those two ships with him?
TIE fighters, Han yelled, gaping at the monitor. Chewie, make the jump. I've had it with this.
The Falcon shook, cockpit lights flickering as several alarms bleeped out at once.
Chewie, get us out of here!
Chewie roared, slamming the control panels. The stars slid into elongated stripes toward them, and Han exhaled for what felt like the first time in hours. Chewbacca muttered something under his breath, and Han shook his head.
You ain't kidding.
He clicked on the comm.
Sana!
You don't have to yell, Sana said, poking her head into the cockpit. I'm right here. Han and Chewie both spun around and glared at her.
You have some explaining to do.
Chandrila, now.
And 7 is 10, Lando said, dropping another small wooden tile on the Kirgat's board. He let out a lavish chuckle. Ha ha! Which makes this a crimson rush, I'm sorry to say. He sat back, arms crossed over his chest, and grinned at the old Mon Cal across the table from him. What you got there, Zo?
Bah!
Those great big bulbous eyes on either side of Admiral Zo Rida's face glinted with joy as he chuckled and shook his head.
Lando, Lando, Lando! This guy!
The Besselist to Lando's left grumbled, elbowing Zo with one of his four huge arms.
Always with the teeth and the smiles and the he-he-he.
His whole wide face turned into a sharp reptilian grin. The early afternoon sun slid languidly past laundry dangling across the alley walls. Above them, neighbors called from one window to another, discussing politics both local and galactic, and debating who would be the new pod racing champion. Zo shrugged.
He can chuckle all he wants, but chuckling won't make a crimson rush, beat!
With much fanfare, he very carefully and achingly placed each of his wooden tiles on the board, one after another.
A Damakian tide!
The Besselisk Barpa busted out laughing. So did old Sev Cantaban, whom everyone swore had to be a distant relative of Lando's. He wasn't, because they looked so much alike. They didn't.
Well, that's just perfect,
Lando grumbled, shoving his stash of credits across the table to Zo.
The one hand that outplays the rush.
A toast,
Sev said as the laughter died down.
To our old buddy Lando here, the big-time war hero.
Lando waved Sev away.
Oh, come on now.
Droid Impresario!
I mean,
former Baron Administrator of Cloud City!
Well, yes, that too,
Lando admitted.
And most important...
Lando shook his head.
Here we go.
Absolute scoundrel! Just like us!
Barpa grunted with pride.
Just like us!
The other two echoed, and then three glasses clinked over the table, spilling a fair amount over the blocks and credits alike. Lando clinked with each of them in turn, and then stood, accepting his honors with gracious nods and slight bows in all directions.
You old so-and-sos are too kind.
Ah!
So said.
We just love you, 'cause you let us win all the time.
Lando stepped back, brow furrowed.
I think you have me mistaken for someone who doesn't care about winning, Zo. Do you really think I can just throw money away like that? Or that even if I couldn't, I would?
More laughter. And Barpa slammed the table hard enough to send all 46 Kirgat's tiles flying, which led to a momentary pause as everyone watched the pieces fly through the air and come clattering down around them. And then they all burst out laughing again.
How is it? Han Solo said, walking up the alleyway toward them. that I've lived here for 3 years and know a small handful of people at best, and you swing by for a day and a half and have three best friends for life?
For a moment, Lando traded glances with the three old veterans.
Bah! Barpa snorted. We just pretend to like him, 'cause he's old Sev's nephew.
Lando sighed and rubbed his face.
No,
second cousin, was it?
Zoe suggested.
Maybe, Lando said with a glint in his eye. It's because I let them win.
Zoe laughed so hard he fell backward off his stool, and the other three had to help him up while Han shook his head.
Are you ready to go, or do you want to hang around for another round getting your butt handed to you?
Come join us, Han!
Barpa called, waving a thick green arm and snorting.
We can hand you your butt, too!
I'm good,
Han said, waving them off.
I get that enough from the pilots' union.
All right.
Lando finished placing Zoe back on his stool and strode over to Han.
I'm out, but I don't know how you're all gonna decide who's gonna lose when you don't have me around.
Sev shrugged.
We'll figure it out, and Barpa's always here to take the fall if no one else does, whether he wants to or not.
Hey,
Barpa snarled. Then he shrugged a concession.
Probably true, though, yeah?
Do you let them win?
Han asked once they'd walked out of earshot.
Yeah, but only to stay in practice. Losing on purpose is one of the hardest things to do, quiet as it's kept. Here.
Lando pulled a rusty crash helmet with a tinted face guard out of his pack as they strolled out of the alley and into the bustling streets of Hana City.
Can we not do helmets?
Han said.
This is really a lot, man.
They crossed an avenue, rounded a corner, and walked into the crowded shuttle station. A garbled robotic voice blurted out departure times over the intercom. Beggars, commuters, pilots, and smugglers bustled back and forth around them.
Do you want to be recognized shopping for a stolen New Republic prisoner transport freighter in the most notorious rogue pilot satellite saloon in the core worlds?
Han pulled the heavy metal contraption over his head and yanked down the face guard.
Well, when you put it like that...
He'd hated helmets since his time as a serviceman on Mimban. Even the tiny nod he'd just given had knocked him off balance, and it always threw him for a loop, not being able to effectively scowl at people. Lando was definitely exaggerating about Frander's Bay. It was notorious, sure, but orbiting the planet where the Galactic Senate resided had blown most of their street cred. But he still had a point.
All I'm seeing is,
Lando said, pulling a helmet over his own head.
I took your wife at her word when she said this has to be under the radar.
They found Hangar 88 and boarded a harried-looking transport shuttle.
You said this had to be under the radar,
Han reminded him.
Well, she agreed.
Welcome to the Frander's Bay Shuttle.
The pilot droid droned as they sat on a ripped Dubak hide bench beside a scowling Nymoidian.
Anyway,
Lando said.
What'd you think of Kasha?
The Nymoidian glared at them, beady eyes surrounded by dusty pale green skin and a metallic breathing apparatus.
Bro Kasha.
Excuse you,
Han snapped. He turned back to Lando.
Seems like she has a good head on her shoulders, which makes me wonder what she's doing with you. Har har. Balance, I guess.
Please secure your restraining belts,
the pilot droid announced.
This is a classic Model 11 Corellian transport shuttle. Ignite engine rotors.
Han made a face.
Model 11? That's from, like...
The whole shuttle shook, and the lights blinked as they lifted away from the docking bay. Something wiry and important-looking fell from an opening in the ceiling.
The Old Republic,
Han finished.
Great,
Lando said.
We're all gonna die.
30 gut-rumbling minutes later, they stumbled off the shuttle into the dim front grotto of the satellite, where small-time hustlers had set up tables full of various scrap metal and damaged starship doodads.
Man,
Lando said, throwing his back against a wall and exhaling.
I thought you Corellians were supposed to be the best starship makers in the galaxy. Oh, we are,
Han said.
But imagine how many times that old boat has gone back and forth between here and the main Terra. A ship from any other of these ragtag wannabe shipyard planets would have been scrap metal by now.
I take your point.
Lando shook off the roiling nausea of nearly dying and straightened his maroon dress shirt.
Now listen, we just need a pilot with a... Imagine two of the greatest pilots in the galaxy looking to hire a pilot.
Han shook his head.
It just feels wrong.
Lando put a comforting hand on his shoulder.
I know, old man, but perk up. At least no one will know it's you. Yeah, but wait a minute.
Han looked up. The trading bazaar stretched off down a dank corridor in a series of makeshift tents and dangling display cages.
Didn't you say the droid that got the jump on you back in Cloud City was wearing a dark green hooded cloak?
Yeah, why?
Han took off into the bazaar, pushing his way through a crowd of teak and dodging a lumbering culp.
What is it?
Lando called, heading after him.
Last time I was here,
Han said.
Wait, why would you come to Flanders Bay? Recruiting pilots for the guild.
How'd that go?
Not so well. Turns out a lot of these guys aren't all their barkers make them out to be.
You mean to tell me,
Lando demanded,
that someone who's paid to say good things about a pilot isn't always telling the truth?
I know.
Han yelled over the din and rattle of a marching band made up of little horned goatles playing pipes and throngo drums.
Shocking. I just wanted to shake up the standard rebel-trained protocol mavens and get some new blood in the system. Anyway, there was an old Toydarian telling fortunes for change out here. Popsies, Popati, everyone said he was top-notch. And I saw him once. The guy didn't have wings, and he was wearing a dark green hooded cloak.
Like that one?
Han followed Lando's glare to where a tall, hooded figure made his way through the crowds up ahead. They shoved their way forward, upsetting a table of poached Nuna eggs and ducking beneath a low-slung Carvathian sequined tarp.
Over there,
Han said. The robed figure disappeared into a narrow side corridor.
Come on!
They turned into the alley, past more random knick-knacks spread out on carpets and stacked in chaotic towers amid the smoke-stained air. Lando drew his blaster as they approached, keeping it low and out of sight. If this was the same droid as the one who jumped him, he would make sure to repay every wretched moment of that experience with interest. And for Kasha, too. The figure turned to the side just as they were closing, and Lando glimpsed a pale human face beneath the hood.
Ah!
A voice wheezed from the ground in front of them. Lando holstered his blaster. Two yellow eyes peered up over a dangly, wrinkled snout.
Hey! You must have come for to have your future divined, hmm?
Yes,
Han said.
My friend Varto here did, actually.
Varto?
Lando repeated, disgusted.
Yes, indeed.
Very good,
the Toydarian chortled.
Very, very good. Svindar, make our two guests at home, yes?
The hooded man bowed, then retrieved two pillows from behind a tarp and placed them in front of a circular stone tablet with grooved lines etched into it. He motioned for Han and Lando to sit.
I am Puppy Deal,
the Toydarian said.
Many call me the greatest diviner in the galaxy. And you know,
he closed his eyes and inhaled deeply, then opened them again.
They are right!
Poppy let out a cackle that sent his dangling snout flapping. Han and Lando lowered themselves onto the cushions.
It's fine, it's fine, Poppy said, still chuckling. No need to remove your helmets. Vasavir, the path of metal and bone, does not require a face to be seen, you know.
Path of what now?
Never mind you,
Poppy crooned.
If you don't know, well, maybe one day you will know, One can hope. Anyway,
He closed his eyes again, then lowered his cowl to reveal a bulbous forehead.
Now, let me see.
Eyes still closed, he fished around in his green robes, then pulled his hands back out, and stern gaze on Lando presented three small objects. Tiny, colorful wires wrapped in and out of yellowed bone fragments and rusted bolts. Some ended in what looked like miniature memory chips and power couplers. Others in sparkling metal fibers.
These are what we call the Vasavir Ficus,
he explained.
Each is sacred. They are made up of parts of the original dozen.
Original?
Lando tried. Poppy hushed him.
As such, they are still touched by dust from the land of plains and chasms, blessed by microfibers of the dozen and the original master, the unifying power of the original source of our new era flows through them, much like what many organics foolishly call...
He raised both hands, crooking all six fingers into crude quotation marks and rolled his eyes.
The Force.
Oh, that old thing.
Lando said, shrugging.
This is the male content,
Poppy said, holding up a humanish metacarpal with red and black strands circling it loosely.
It means the house wins and you lose.
Lose what?
Lando asked.
Everything,
Poppy said with a wiggle of his eyebrows.
This is the neuronaut.
A thigh bone, encased in fiber wire and dried strands of ligament.
It is a neutral. It means the house takes half, and you take half.
Half of everything,
Han said.
Now you're getting it,
Poppy agreed.
And this is the octopent.
A small beaked skull with eight wires stretching out from a metal base piece, tiny pincers at the end of each.
It means you win, and the house loses.
I thought this was divination,
Lando said.
Looks more like gambling to me.
Poppy opened one eye very wide and leaned in toward Lando.
What's wrong? You don't like the gambling?
That's not something that could ever be said about me, no.
What is divination anyway, if not gambling,
I mean...
Lando started.
If you win at gambling, your future is bright, is it not?
Well, when you put it that way...
Han said. Lando grinned at the Toydarian.
That is a philosophy I can get down with.
Poppy chuckled to himself as he emptied a small cloth sack full of old screws and bolts onto the divining plate and started shuffling them around beneath his palm.
Money?
He said without looking up. Lando slid 50 credits onto the tablet. Poppy nodded approvingly.
A true gambling man! Very nice. Yes, yes. Now you take these.
Still swirling the rusted metal pieces beneath his palm, he placed the three bricolage figurines into Lando's hands.
And when I say drop them, you simply let them fall onto the board, yes? Don't whip them, like your wily-hearted friend here would have done if he had the chance, eh?
Hey!
Han snapped.
Just simply let them fall, yes?
Is it three? Let's go either leaves.
A strange wave of calm swept over Lando. He nodded.
And release.
The Toydarian croaked, pulling his hand away from the board. Lando dropped the three pieces, and they clattered down amid the screws and bolts.
Wait!
Poppy cautioned as all the pieces settled.
Wait! All right, let me see here.
The Neuronaut lay closest to Lando, surrounded by a cluster of bolts and screws. The Octopent and Malcontent lay off to the side, amid scattered metal bits.
It says... You're going to die.
Wait, what?
Lando said. Poppy let out a wild peal of laughter.
The kid! Just in jest, yes?
Lando and Han traded glances, each sure the other shared his skeptical snarl beneath the helmet.
Sort of.
Poppy conceded.
No, with seriousness now, eh? It says you will come to a crossroads, And there you will have a choice, yes?
Sounds pretty generic,
Lando said.
And in this choice, you, who once walked the neutral path, the road that is neither this nor that, will suddenly demand a road that is all roads at once. It is a road that some call death, That is why the joke. But really, it only means the kind of death that must happen before one is born again.
I could have sworn I gave up being neutral 3 years ago when I joined the Rebel Alliance. But what do I know?
Eyes suddenly narrowed to slits. The Toydarian reached across the tablet and bapped Lando on the shoulder.
Not neutral in war, you swamp slug.
Hey!
Lando jerked away. Poppy held up one finger.
Neutral.
Another.
In.
Then the third.
Love.
Oh.
Lando and Han both said at the same time.
Well, that is different,
Lando admitted.
Still, I thought...
Here,
Poppy said, picking up the stack of credits and handing Lando half.
For you. This?
He tapped the other half.
For me.
Thanks,
Lando said.
You are reading with the Neuronaut,
Poppy explained, counting his money.
And that's what you get when you read with the Neuronaut. If you decide to make better choices, then perhaps you can one day have it all.
Well, damn,
Lando said. Then he put his half back down and tripled it. Poppy blinked at the stack.
You wish for to try your luck again?
Nope.
Lando said.
I want the set.
Poppy's mouth dropped open.
This is not done, no! A Vazavir set is not something one just buys,
He shuffled the ficus and rusted metal screw bolts into a little pile.
It is crafted.
Shoved the pile into its sack.
Fine tooth!
Put the sack in a little shelf next to it.
It is a sacred relic. Shard of the droid divinity, yes? The original does it. One does not buy an artifact. One earns it.
All right.
Lando said, shaking his head as he pocketed the credits.
Just thought I'd ask. I'm an aficionado, you could say, of gambling variations throughout the galaxy.
Svindar, pack up! We're done for the day, yes?
Svindar started gathering various containers and rucksacks. Lando and Han rose.
Come on, Varto,
Han said.
We've got places to be.
Wait,
Lando said, stepping over the divining tablet.
Svindar, man, get your hands off my bag.
What's this?
Poppy demanded. Svindar turned, the same blank expression on his face, and stared at Lando.
That's my bag, man,
Lando said, fist clenched.
Easy,
Han said, putting a hand on Lando's shoulder.
You didn't bring it back, remember?
Get out of here! Papa yelled. Leave this place!
All right, all right.
Lando chuckled, suddenly magnanimous.
Just a simple mistake is all.
Mm-hmm. Be gone now!
The Toydarian called as they walked away.
Get it?
Lando asked once they rounded the corner. Han flipped the little cloth sack up into the air.
Got it.
Lando caught it without losing stride and shoved it in his pocket. Chandrila.
Now.
Huge vent fans rattled over the barters, curses, and bellowing on the main floor of Frander's Bay. At tables lining either side of the room, barkers in elaborate swirly outfits extolled the various exploits and skills of the unaffiliated pilots they repped.
Oh,
Lando said, studying the exhibit hall listing plastered to the wall.
Huh?
Han kept eyes on the swarming crowd around them.
I didn't know you were hawking your skills as an unaffiliated Captain Solo. What?
Han glanced over. There indeed was his name, right beside a ship designation.
How am I? And doesn't the New Republic use ZV-9 freighters for prison transports? How perfect. Hey, slow down!
But Lando had already bustled off into the crowd.
Brantis Morfresk!
One of the barkers hollered into Han's ear as he passed.
Unparalleled in his flight artistry! His ship, the Varantis, beat the Bright Fox in the Kari Blockade Clutch this year! That's correct, ladies and gents! You heard me right!
How could we not?
Han scowled.
Pras Fatir!
Another yelled.
Fastest flyer on Alzak 3!
Well, that's not really saying much.
Han snorted. Lando shook his head.
Must you?
Just being true to who I am, old buddy. Find time to do it when we're in disguise. The best time to do it, if you ask me. Ah, here we go.
A lone pilot sat behind table 746B, fingers laced behind a dark brown, clean-shaven head. Long, skinny legs stretched across the table. They wore an ancient-looking leather jacket and pants with 1,000 pockets. Their eyes were closed, lips moving in triple time to whatever loudness was blasting through the extra-large headphones cupping either ear.
The likeness to you is actually uncanny,
Lando marveled.
I'm certainly convinced.
They approached the table.
I don't even, I can't even, how they even, what they even.
The young pilot sang, eyes still closed. Han and Lando exchanged a glance, then sat in the two chairs provided. A cheap plastic cloth hung draped over the table, and on top of that, a bowl of chewable candies had been set out, with a sign saying, take one. Han lifted the bowl and dropped it on the table.
Whoa!
The pilot's eyes shot open, and they sprang forward in the chair.
We're looking for a ship,
Lando said.
What?
A ship. Can you take the headgear off, maybe?
Han suggested.
Ah!
With a wink and a grin, the alternative Han Solo pulled off their headphones.
What's good, gentlemen? How may I help you today?
You're the only pilot here without a barker,
Han said. A shrug.
Who needs a barker when you got a name?
Han Solo, huh?
Lando mused.
Famed war hero of the rebellion.
Captain of the ship that made the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs.
Han added.
It was the ship that made the run, not the captain.
Lando smirked.
Not for nothing.
A fast ship is only as fast as its captain.
Han countered.
Is it, though? The same ship destroyed the second Death Star, as I recall. Who was captain in it, then?
Gentlemen?
Han and Lando turned back to the pilot.
What are you, like 12?
Han demanded.
21.
Lando shook his head.
You were barely born when that run happened. What's your real name?
The pilot slid a credentials card across the table. Lando picked it up, scanned it into his data pad.
Why the ruse?
Han asked.
Why not just use your real name?
My name doesn't get people to sit at the table. With a name like Han Solo, folks come by out of sheer curiosity.
That works.
Here you sit.
Taka Jamarisa,
Lando said. He passed the datapad to Han as a digital pic of the young pilot, with a big, ridiculous grin, flashed over a reel of enthusiastically fonted text.
Taka Jamarisa, pilot extraordinaire. Their courage and speed know no bounds. They have aced every pilot in this room and are wanted in about 18 galaxies. They need no introduction. The other pilots don't even talk to Taka. That's how serious this is.
A whirlwind of wanted listings, bounties, and various intergalactic pirating infractions scrolled past. Han squinted through the blurry, vision-depleting face guard. Did this kid know who he was? Could this be some kind of setup? He glanced around, hand wrapping around the blaster on his hip.
Anyway,
Taka said, taking their credentials back and pocketing them.
If you're here on Frander's Bay, it's because you're doing something on the low. And if you're here at Table 746B, it's because you're looking for a ZV-9, which means you're probably planning to soup it up and make it an incognito-type run, posing as an NR transport of some kind. Either a delivery, or perhaps...
They arched both eyebrows.
A personnel carrier.
Lando and Han just stared at Taka. Han was liking this less and less by the second.
What's the cargo?
Taka asked, dropping one brow but keeping the other perfectly poised.
Only passengers,
Lando said.
Myself, this guy, a Twi'lek and an Ewok and a busted-up droid.
Sounds like a bad joke,
Taka mused.
It very well might end up that way,
Lando acknowledged.
If we don't stay under the radar. I don't like any of this,
Han declared. He nudged his blaster out of its holster and had it under the table pointed directly at Taka. Lando was staring at him.
What's the matter, man?
Taka seemed unbothered.
Who are you really?
Han demanded.
How?
Something wet and slimy had wrapped around his gun hand, gooing it up entirely.
What in the...
Two bulging yellow eyes peered up at him from under the table. Han tried to tug his hand out of the sticky mire, but it was stuck fast. A wide, slobbery smile opened across the creature's lumpy, green-brown face.
What is that?
Oh,
Taka said, tossing a lackadaisical glance in Han's direction.
You met Korg.
Korg?
Korg the wart. My wart.
Well, tell it to untongue me.
Han demanded.
Korg hates it when people pull blasters on me. It's terrible, really. He had a bad experience with blasters as a pup, and now he gets really overprotective.
Lando peered over Han's lap and let out a chuckle.
You're all mugged up, buddy-o. Get this slime bucket to free up my hand, or it'll have a brand new bad experience with a blaster to remember me by.
Wild thing is...
Taka explained, leaning in.
That won't work. Wart saliva jams blasters. It's like an evolutionary mechanism they developed, I guess, living in the various badlands across the galaxy and whatnot. Most folks don't even bother hunting with them because they just gum up all their tech. Isn't that right, Corgi boy?
They reached down and gave the bulbous creature a loving scratch on the scruff of the neck. The wart purred a flatulent, burbling song and retracted his tongue.
I think we've found our pilot,
Lando said. Han shook his head.
I need a washroom and a new blaster, and then we'll talk.
I don't want to know,
Leia said once again, squeezing Han's hand. Their speeder worked its way through the midday Hana City traffic toward the central docking station.
Just tell me you'll be all right.
All I do is be all right,
Han said, pushing his lips out and squinting like that was the most obvious thing in the world.
Stop, Leia said, suddenly serious. Just cut the routine for a second and just be with me. This last time, let's be us.
Han looked sideways at her.
What do you mean, last time?
Oh, nothing.
Leia sighed, shook her head.
I didn't mean it like that. Last time before you leave is all.
Han nodded. It hadn't felt like that was what she meant.
You're not having some kind of vision, are you? Is there something you want to tell me?
She shot him a sharp look, and for a minute he thought she might tear into him. He'd been dead serious when he said it, but he almost never managed to sound that way when he wanted to. Always came out sarcastic or mocking somehow. But Leia just shook her head, face downcast. Then she scooted across the seat toward him, took Han's face in her hands, and pressed her lips against his. Snarky comebacks swirled through his mind, but he managed to discard them unsaid, and then allowed the feeling of her body close to his to overtake him. It seemed like they never stopped moving anymore and just held each other. It was this and that and the other, and if it wasn't one of those things, it was Ben. Ben, who was back home being minded by L.C. Ben, who would wonder where his father was in the morning. Ben, whom Han had no idea how to be a father to.
What is it?
Leia asked, her face still close. And there it was. Even without the boy there, Han had let him slip in between them somehow. Maybe he should add being a husband next to being a father on the list of things Han didn't know how to do.
Nothing, he said. Got lost in my head again.
I'll be on the Hollow when I can,
Leia said.
You know there's a lot going on over here.
Do I ever.
And anyway, you'll have your hands pretty full from the look of it.
They rolled up to an open loading dock, where the Vermilion, a clunky, medium-sized transport freighter, stood on its landing gear. Steam rose around it, and sparks flew from somewhere over the topside, where Taka must have been making last-minute fixes with Flork's Biggles. Lando, Kasha Bateen, and Peekpa stood talking in front of the gangplank. Leia eyed the Vermilion.
That looks like the kind of freighters we use for prisoner transport.
You don't want to know, Han said. Believe me.
I really don't. And listen,
Leia said as they stepped out of the speeder.
Keep an eye on Lando.
You think he's kidding himself about this thing with the Twi'lek being something serious for him?
No,
Leia said.
Even worse, I think he might be right.
Oh.
We thought Forever Player Lando was bad. Head over heels Lando might be 10 times worse.
Yikes. Hadn't thought of that.
Hey.
She wrapped her arms around Han and put her head on his chest.
Careful out there.
As you command,
he said, kissing the top of her head.
Whoa! Is that Princess Leia?
Taka called, standing on the top of the Vermilion and raising a pair of goggles.
Hi, Princess. I love you.
Korg's head appeared, long tongue dangling out as he panted and then barked 2 burps of appreciation. Leia raised her eyebrows and waved back.
Quite a crew you found yourself. All right, this is as far as I go.
Lando, Kasha, she called.
Take care of my husband. He's the only one I've got.
Of course, Senator Organa,
Lando said with a gentlemanly bow.
It's our duty and honor.
That's what I'm afraid of,
Leia said.
We're good to go,
Taka called as the speeder headed off. Han, Lando, Kasha, and Peekpa boarded, and the Vermilion rumbled a blast of exhaust fumes out of its wing pipes, and then lifted into the sky over Chandrilla and blasted off.
Utapau, about 20 years ago.
This was all ocean once,
a scratchy voice said, as the endless Utapauan plains rolled past. Faizan Gore turned, his eyes linking with the Class 1 medical droid strapped into the transport speeder across from him. Soft green lights glowed from within the droid's narrow optical slits, which curved down beneath a skull-like dome, making the thing look perpetually worried. A rusty, striated vocabulator box sat between two sunken-in cheeks, tubes dangling from either side to the droid's chest plate. Faizan wanted to reply, but the lump in his throat made him feel like any word he spoke might release it, and then he'd be sobbing. And if he sobbed, the killers would know, surely, that he was soft, pathetic, really, and they'd kill him and toss him out the back of the transport. Or worse, they'd just toss him out the back of the transport and leave him to die a much worse death, picked apart slowly by a Viractyl pack, or captured and tortured by Amani Plains pirates. So instead of replying, he just acknowledged the comment with a nod, and went back to gazing through the gunport.
You are afraid,
the droid said, its dead-eyed stare boring into Faizan.
I'm not,
Gristo Fatrak quipped. Faizan shot his friend a warning look, but no one could ever tell Gristo what to do. Just hours earlier, the two had been sitting innocently in one of the brightly lit demonstration chambers of the Pristine Bra'ak, Utapau's most esteemed medical school. Like most of Pau City, the Bra'ak was nestled deep within the inner bowels of the planet, and Faizan reveled in the sense of safety afforded by thousands of meters of dirt and concrete between himself and the cruel, wild plains of the surface. The professors had been in the middle of dissecting a sedated Geonosian. Because the patient was still alive, a mechanical voice explained over the loudspeakers, the fluids could be seen pumping away through its circulatory system as layers of exoskeleton were removed. Graduation was only a few weeks away, and Faizan and Gristo had talked about opening their own off-site surgical center in the Prevow sector of Pau City. That meant they'd be dealing with any number of species from across the galaxy. So Faizan had been leaning in, paying extra close attention, unlike Gristo, who was clacking away on his data pad, arrogantly uninterested as always. And then the doors had burst open, and the Pauan gunners had come in. They were even taller than most Pauans, and they wore black cloaks and wide circular hats. Masks covered the bottom half of their long faces. Everyone screamed when the gunners stomped in, and a few students got up to run. But then more appeared at each of the doorways. Faizan just stood, frozen, watched with his mouth hanging open as a debilitating terror crept over him. His parents had warned him about the Pauan gangs, but they were always faceless figures, lurking in the shadows at the edges of Pau City. No names. Just stay down and stay quiet, and they will leave, Faizan thought, a trembling kind of prayer. They will leave. They have no reason to care about me. I am no one.
This is very simple,
the leader said in a slow drawl. He stood on a table, waving his blaster around the room.
Stay down and stay quiet. Stay down and stay quiet.
Who is the most promising student in the room?
Faizan thought he was going to throw up. It was a running joke in the class that he knew more about anatomy than the professors. They called him Dr. Gore whenever he raised his hand to answer a question that had everyone else stumped. It had been a source of pride at first, until he realized the others begrudged him his brilliance. All except Gristo, who didn't seem to care one way or the other. And now it would seal his fate.
terrified and bereft of any sense of loyalty to their fellow student, the whole auditorium turned their sunken, pawin eyes to Fison Gore. And then the gunners did, too. Fison got ready to scream, to be blasted, to maybe just collapse beneath the weight of this sudden, impossible horror. And then a voice said,
"I am."
And Gristo Fatrak stood up, looking as languid and unimpressed as ever. Fison sputtered and blinked. He couldn't. How could this be happening? The head gunner looked back and forth between them. Fison wasn't even sure what he wanted to happen. Could he live with himself if his best friend was hauled off in his place? Still, his parents' warnings and the desperate voice inside him clamored away. "Stay down and stay quiet. Stay down and stay quiet."
"Take them boats!"
the head gunner finally snarled. Then he clambered off the table as his crew closed in and grabbed Fison and Gristo with impossibly tight grips, hauling them away. And now the surface field stretched out around them, and they were rumbling off to who knew where. And Gristo, the inexplicable, the heroic, the utterly reckless, was still running his mouth.
"You're not scared?"
one of the hooded gunners said, a grin sliding across his face.
"How cute. Perhaps you should be."
"You held up a medical school,"
Gristo said.
"Kidnapped the two most promising surgical students. Took them out to the wastelands beyond the shrapnel field."
He glanced out the window. Two dactylians glided through the distant sky. Fison wished desperately that his friend would shut up for once in his life.
"In a few more clicks we'll be past even sinkhole Krasna."
All the gunners were staring now, eyes narrowed.
"And there's a medical droid on board. And at least 10 more in the cargo hold of this thing from what I saw. That means you're going to a drop of some kind. Probably with gunrunners, if I had to guess. You're a wandering star. So you've been fighting off the Utai gangs encroaching on your territory. And the Imani have outposts here somewhere. So probably..."
A blast shrieked out, and Fison screamed, wondering if he was dead. But it was Gristo, who looked down at his own smoking chest in shock. Mouth open, eyes wide and watery. A splash of blood burst from his lips.
But...
he stuttered, then slumped over.
"Your friend, he talks too much."
The gunner shrugged and holstered his blaster.
Talks,
he amended unnecessarily. Fison had been staring in disbelief, his own heart pounding incessant explosions in his ears. He lurched toward Gristo's heaving, bleeding body, forgetting about his restraining belt, and found himself yanked backward, and then staring down the barrels of three blasters.
"Maybe don't follow in those footsteps, eh?"
the gunner drawled.
"We would prefer not to have to kill two of Utapau's most promising young surgeons in one day."
A shrill whistle sounded outside, and then the transport rocked with a mortar blast.
"It's an ambush!"
the driver called from the cockpit.
"There's a roadblock ahead! Ram them!"
the head gunner commanded.
"Perhaps,"
the medical droid advised,
"it would not be wise to ram them."
"Please?" Fison found himself praying to a god he had no name for.
"Please, don't let them ram the roadblock."
Gristo was still breathing, although not much from the look of it. But that meant there was still a chance. Between the medical droid and Fison's own skills, maybe, just maybe, they could save him. But not if they got blown up first.
"Quiet, droid!"
the gangster snapped.
"Accelerate to ramming speed!"
Blaster fire slammed against the armored sides of the transport as the engines rattled into high gear. Fison was positive he was going to be sick, and then they were all going to die. He wondered briefly where his parents were at that moment, and whether they'd found out that their only son had been kidnapped, that they'd probably never see him again. And then,
With another screech and a teeth-shattering explosion, the cramped metal world of the transport speeder heaved forward, and they went catapulting upside down through the air. For a fraction of a second, everything seemed to freeze in motion.